In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
Hey everybody, Jim Hoffman here for EMS Office Hours, joined by
Josh Knapp.
Josh,
I'm here.
Good evening.
Good evening, Jim. How you doing?
All right.
How the roads and stuff up by you?
By me, they're pretty good. Starting to have a gas issue, I think.
Yeah, well, they're shipping all your gas down to us because we're crying like bitches.
Yeah.
We need our gas.
I know. Well, I'll tell you, we got they got Epi Junkie and John Broyles over in the chat room. We just want to say hello to them.
Awesome.
Epi Junkie actually was on a show a while back with me and talked about her paramedic school experiences, which was pretty cool. I'm glad she joined back up a little bit and chat in the chat room.
You mean she survived paramedic school and she's back for more?
I think so, yeah. Seems that way. What else? Well, today I am going to be, hopefully we'll get some people calling in, maybe giving their experiences for the hurricane and what they've sort of gone through, maybe from an EMS perspective. So anybody listening, I'm going to give out the number real quick so that people can have it. I'll say it throughout the show. But the show toll number, the toll free number to call in, guys, you want to call in and maybe give a quick synopsis of what you went through or what you've experienced. It's 877-217-3924. I'd love to get ahead and get your opinions on all that. I think we got somebody already online. It might be Bob or Dave. Hello.
Hey, it's Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bob. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you guys? Jeff on Expo?
Ha, ha, ha. You had to go straight there, didn't you? You had to ask that right off.
I'm sorry. I was out of the Twitter loop.
Yeah. Well, I was supposed to go, Bob, but all my flights got canceled and the airports just shut down.
No.
Yeah. So I was unable to make it and do the podcast from the show floor, which is a little disappointing, but you know, looking back on it, I mean I should be thankful that I didn't have as much, you know, I didn't have it anywhere near the damage or, you know, inconvenience and being stranded and without power and lights and food and gas.
Now, Jim, of course, is leaving out the whole backstory to this, is that the reason his flight was canceled is because he was leaving from Newark, New Jersey, which is not only in the next state over,
yeah,
but far south from where Jim lives.
Yeah, but actually, when they ended up canceling, I tried to switch it to a closer airport by me, but flights, you know what it is, it's... Once it starts to happen, it's like a domino effect, and you get all the attaching flights and connecting flights and everything.
All I'm saying is if you were closer to the right airport, you could have gotten out. You might have gotten off the ground.
Like where?
Aren't they giving you they're giving you a free pass for next year. I heard that, right?
Yeah.
But it's a year away.
What's that?
But it's a year away.
Yeah. Oh, what are you going to do? I'm starting to get a complex. You know, Greg Freeze had tweeted to me and asked me what was going on. I told him, I don't know. I said, you know, I'm waiting to the last minute. Hopefully I can get something coming out. And he said, you know, if you remember right, last year they had Hurricane Irene and you had trouble getting to the expo for that. So it's like 2 years in a row I'm trying to get to the expo and both times the hurricane hits. So. Well, last year I made it the skin of my teeth. I got out just in time, so ended up making it to that one.
You know what? It's it was interesting. I was holed up at my dad's house in Long Island because he's getting on a little bit, and no one was with him. We were watching a storm come in, and he there were flashes off in the in the distance. You know, we saw from our living room window, and he was like, "What are those?" And I looked, and it's like. That's like the second or third time I've seen it in my lifetime, which was Transformers blow up in sequence.
Yeah.
I was out in California. I think it was 98 was the big earthquake out there, or 90 something, and that was the other time that I saw that. So very eerie and disconnecting sight.
Sure, sure. I tell you, it's you know. Where I am this year, we didn't really get hit that hard with the weather. Initially, we had some power outages. Some of the surrounding areas by me had a lot of trees getting knocked down. Some flooding going on, you know, places that were closer to the water. But nothing like we had during Irene, where we had entire, you know, towns were demolished and, you know, roads and bridges and all that stuff knocked out and no power for days and all that. So, you know, seeing the destruction now going on in the city and you know, places where I used to work and even New Jersey where, you know, places where I used to work there, actually where I lived in Jersey, a friend of mine said, if lucky I don't live there anymore, I'd be gone altogether, you know. And so it's just, it's a little... a little disheartening to see that stuff, and it gets me to thinking, like, what EMS providers have to go through, you know, during these types of events, you know. You know, we have our standard role to play, which is the medical end of it, but then you start getting into things like the rescue end of it, you know. So, you know, Josh, I mean, I know I've seen some stuff in your Facebook page about the Central Park unit kind of going into action with their units and trying to be a resource. And I know a lot of other ambulances also came to the city as well as, you know, to try to be a resource for whatever it is that they might be needed for.
Yeah, I think that they were part of a disaster plan. And they were actually on contract. A lot of these ambulances were just transport services from other areas. I don't know the full story, so I don't. If it was a volunteer effort, you know, I applaud them. But my
I'm sure a lot of it was contracted.
Yeah,
you know, but I mean, even that. I mean, you think about the just the enormity of some of the evacuations of some of the hospitals that had to get done. You know, just seeing
it's crazy.
Some of that activity going on. I mean, it's just honestly, I tell you, watching the news and looking at the Facebook threads and the Twitter feeds and the stuff that's getting posted at GEMS and the other EMS websites, it's so hard to keep up with so much stuff that was going on during the storm and continues to go on. As, you know, everyone tries to recover and tries to just get some semblance of, you know...
regular living.
Yeah, I mean, they're so far away from that still now with no power and so many things that have been flooded out, you know. You know, the subway systems, you know, those who aren't from New York City don't know what a subway is. That's the underground railroad systems. Mass, you know, underground transit system, I guess you would call it.
I'm pretty much thinking that even if you're not from New York, you know what the New York subway is.
I don't know.
I mean, I like, you know, they do have it in a couple of other places, these trains that go underground. I mean, granted, they're not quite as large, but I got the feeling. I'm gonna give it to our listeners tonight that they actually know what a subway is, Jim.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, just to kick it up a notch. So.
All right. Well, if anybody has no idea what that is, please.
Write in.
Be sure to let me know that you didn't know what it was and that short explanation helped you so I could rub it in Josh's face.
Yes. Yes. And if you do, already know, you know, you can also send in a tweet or a post for Jim that says, "I fucking know what a subway is. Right. What do you think? I'm an idiot."
Right. But as you can tell, even if you don't, even if you did know what it was, and you want to say that you didn't know, just so I could rub it in Josh's face as being so arrogant, feel free.
And you know.
Because I'd be more than happy to lie along with you and say that you didn't know.
So you're trying to elicit our listeners to lie on your behalf.
Yes.
Just so you can put it back at and I'm not even the one being smug here. I'm standing up for our listeners. I'm saying, you know what? There's probably a few EMTs and paramedics there that have a clue, and that's why they're listening.
I hope so.
What's a subway? Screw off.
All right, we'll see. If I better pray.
Haven't they watched Sesame Street?
Email.
You know what? You know what was really the really scary part was that usually the media overhypes everything that's going on. You know, there was an overturn on I-80, and you know, things burst into flames and people threw in the air, and you know, a million resources are going there, and you know, you get the idea that there were 15 cars in a pileup when there was, you know, one pickup and a sheep. And it's this was one of those rare times when the news media really didn't capture what the hell was going on. I mean, there were people, there were medics going up 15 flights of stairs, if you could imagine a medic doing that, not sending an EMT, and coming down with critical care rigs, you know, multiple pumps and all that jazz going on, vents and things like that, and taking people in like carry stretchers, you know, emergency carry stretchers or stair chairs down those flights of stairs so they could be transported to a facility that could take care of them. I mean, news media was not really capturing the extraordinary effort on the side of EMS and what these people did. And I know, you know, by looks of the jobs and what I've heard, a lot of people were just thrown into the fire. You know, never backed somebody before. Well, here's somebody who's intubated and sedated, and you have to just keep their O2 sats correct. Go for it. And I guess a point of that is, you know, this is why we practice our skills. This is why we need to stay up on stuff, because you never know when you're going to be thrown in that moment when you're going to really have to use what you're supposed to know.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I actually was watching a TV show about the heroes of Sandy. And, you know, they had the nurses, you know, bringing down.
Right.
You know, the nurses bringing down the people and bagging them as they were going down the stairwells.
Was that a Johnson & Johnson commercial?
I don't know what the hell it was. But all I know is that, you know, there was no mention about EMS or even the fire department for that matter. It was the nurses that did it. They bagged the patient. You know, and every step we said squeeze. And we stepped and we squeezed. I'm like, oh, my God. And then you got this group of nurses sitting there. Oh. Pat each other on the back.
Call it technically bagging the air. That's what I read in. And I was just like, oh, do you? I mean, when was the last time you intubated anybody, honey?
You know, let me tell you something. You know, I'm sure that they had to do some of that because, you know, when this power goes out and they had no power, they had to do something for these patients that were on vents. They couldn't, I mean, they're not going to wait for EMS to get there to start bagging because then they'd have a lot of dead patients on their hands.
Well, you know, and that's a lot of these vents had multi-hour battery backups. Not that the whole thing didn't last, you know, 2 days. And,
yeah, exactly.
But triage, you know, the patients that are on the vents, the patients that are – how about the patients that – you know, some of these pumps don't have battery backups. And let's say they're on some sort of – you know, you have a guy who's on five drips, three pressors, you know, sedation and whatnot, and it all stops at once. What happens with them? Much less screw the vent.
You know, right, because they get the drugs now that the patient's not getting on top of the temples.
There's a lot of complexity to this. Yes, we Jesus, what a nightmare. No,
but it's true though. This is one of the reasons. Yeah, and this is one of the reasons why I wanted to sort of try to get this show. I mean, I'd like to see if we get some people calling in and maybe giving their experiences, even if just for a short minute or two, just to sort of give a little bit of a peek into what they actually did or what they saw during the event, because really there's so much such a magnitude of what was going on at so many different levels. I mean, even just if let's say you just an ambulance that's responding to just a basic emergency call during this, you know, trying to get through the floods and trying to get through all the block streets and the traffic and everything that was going on. I mean, just that alone, to just get to your basic, let's say, you know, abdominal pain. What that must have been like, that in the city of New York and even Brooklyn and things like that, where you've got, you know, 5, 6, 7 or higher, you know, walk-ups now because elevators are out. You know what I mean?
You know what? And it's enough, you know.
And you're on your own because the system is taxed to the max. You're not getting backup. You're not getting a lift assist. You're not getting anybody to come help you, you know, carry. It's, you know, you're on your own at that point.
Oh, I remember I worked a New Year's Eve, and it was everybody had gone crazy, and it was about 1 o'clock in the morning, and you know, you heard this BLS unit on the radio calling for ALS for an arrest, and the dispatcher just said, "Hey, listen, you know what? There ain't no ALS. Nobody's coming. So do what you're damn well trained to do: bag 'em and carry 'em." Yeah. And get him to the hospital. And it was just like, holy crap. Did he say that on the radio?
Well, I think sometimes, though, what happens is I think people get into that. I don't want to say spoiled, but they get into the norm of the job where, yeah, you're going to ask for an ALS assistance, or you're going to ask for lift assist for certain patients and whatnot. And you sort of, it's almost like a reflex, just pick the radio up and ask for that. You don't even think sometimes that okay, wait a second. You know, this
and I know that's
not
a sore
happen.
Spot for you, Jim. I know that you think that, you know, in some places you've worked that there are resources out there that don't think to handle the job or what they can handle, and they immediately ask for extra help.
They think that there's an unlimited supply.
But there's another side to this too. I mean, realize how dangerous our job is. When you're, you know, due regard when responding to and from, you know, jobs. You know, is more than just something you get on your MDT or KDT or hear over the radio. It's real. Right. I mean, you see the pictures all the time, but when are they going to frickin' make an impact in your head, you know, that a tree limb can crush a car? Now, I don't know the last time you tried to crush a car, but I'm sure that you found that the metal on the car was, you know, reasonably strong. You know, you may be able to make a dent if you wanted, but you weren't going to collapse the A-post. And one of these branches falling down pancakes a car. Now, you're riding along in a bus. You think you're magically...
That's an ambulance for those that are outside New York City.
You know what? In New Zealand, they call them buses, okay? just say it, Jim.
I'm just trying to help out.
You know what? You have a fiberglass frame.
Epi just said, "What's a bus?"
What's a bus? Yeah, thank you, Epi.
See?
You know, okay, everybody, all at once, who wants to kiss Jim's ass? Just
no, it's not about that. I am trying to.
I need more explanation of what a bus is than a subway.
See, exactly.
An ambulance.
Well, you know, Josh, the thing is, too, it is true, and I wonder, like, in situations like this, in an event like this, where how many people sort of throw that caution to the wind as well, where you're not looking out for your safety as much as you normally would, because you're trying to get the job done, whether it's respond to a basic call, whether it is, you know, actually trying to help somebody that needs some sort of a rescue going on. You know, and I think a lot of times people start working outside of their training as well. I mean, you get people who, in EMS, who might be doing rescue stuff, and, you know, New York City, that EMS isn't really, they don't really do the rescue end of the job. You know, it's usually reserved for fire and for, you know, ESU and things like that, you know. But I think in an event like this, you get people who sort of start doing this cross, you know, job training thing. But that goes for even civilians. You know, we get, you've heard stories, I'm sure, already of just your average Joe who did something to rescue somebody that was, you know, trapped in water or in their car or something like that.
Yeah, and, you know? and those are the times when, you know, we come together as communities and start looking out for each other. I mean, there are stories all over town of people going up and down these high-rises making sure some of the elderly who never even get out have food, have water, are looked in on. I mean, that's all what makes us, you know, that's the first step of what a lot of us are, and then we actually get into the professional end of it or more highly trained end of it. You know, some of us are always volunteers, and that doesn't, you know, take anything away. It makes it sort of adds.
Yeah, I mean, I just, like I said, I just feel like this, the sheer, you know, size of this whole event, and not even just focusing just on the city, you know, the Manhattan end of it. You've got, you know, Brooklyn, you've got parts of Queens and Long Island and, you know, New Jersey, of course, you know, even places like Connecticut and things like that, that all have been affected by this. You know, there's only so many first responders that are out there that are available to help.
Well, that's been a thing I've said before, Jim, you know, about the idea that how many of us work two jobs? And, you know, we're in the system, we're counted as one seat, you know, or we're counted as two seats is what I meant to say. So at one organization, we're counted as a resource for them, and another organization, we're counted as maybe a part-time resource for them. And then when, you know, you get the emergency management and the incident action plans together and you do your IM get-together and meeting, and all of a sudden you know, you're counting all these resources that magically aren't there. And I think that's one of our biggest weaknesses.
And I think, I mean, this, we had some days worth of warning, I guess, you know, but I still don't think that it was, people were, you know, it was as prepared.
Now, what would, well, they,
as they thought. They didn't
the,
think,
the
they
administration was actually really lauded on pre-planning, and apparently, and I wasn't aware of this until I heard it in some news stories, they positioned both resources and trucks and National Guard and everybody else around the areas they expected to get hit so they could get in quicker with the resources that they needed. Now, I think what happened in the end is they underestimated the resources, or, you know, there's always going to be greater immediate resources need than you have resources to fill.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the nature of these storms. Now, what if you took it one step further and EMS was nationalized? Oh, that word. But we were part of a federal government agency. So when there was an expected situation in one city or one town, or we know that the floods are coming into Kansas, that we can then go and get a whole bunch of folks from different areas of the country and add several hundred personnel and vehicles to that area and have them stand by for the emergency, you know, it's going to happen.
Yeah. Bob, any thoughts? I know you're on hold there, Bob. I don't want to, I know you're working, so in case you get a call, I don't want you to just have to jump off. So.
Oh no.
Feel free to chime in.
One thing, just for me, it was supposed to hit where I live, and then in a twist of fate, it veered off and hit you guys a lot worse than it got my area. But I was concerned about my family because I was scheduled to be off during the storm. But, you know, like Josh said, you can get called in and everyone is counted on. And, you know, when the power is out at our houses, you know, that's our, and there's storm damage and floods and people are trapped. I mean, our families are kind of stuck there to deal with it without our help. Because, you know, first responders, when these things happen, you know, we have to go in and we have to work and kind of clean up our messes after the crisis is over.
Yeah,
I mean, we get second for home.
That's the thing too. I mean, I've seen a couple of things online where people who knew their houses were destroyed, and they were, you know, having, and they just kept working, you know. I mean, I know places where firehouses and EMS squad buildings were washed out, and they lost their gear and equipment, which then, of course, inhibited them responding and being able to help as much as I guess they would want to, you know, without having the gear and equipment to do so. You know, and it's, I mean, listen, I pretty much have a lot of family in Jersey. They all lost power. My brother lost his house, you know, so it's a lot that I think went on. You
Your
know.
Brother lost his house, Jim? I didn't,
yep.
You didn't mention that. Wait, his like full home or summer home?
No, the home.
Out? I mean, down and out or temporary?
No, it's pretty much down and out. I mean,
holy crap, I didn't know that. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. So you know, it's just amazing to me, you know, people that do the job and, you know, they keep, you know, plugging away, you know, trying to do as much as they can until they can get away to go assess their own damage.
Is your brother an EMS?
No.
Okay, so.
You know, but I'm saying about people that I've seen as far as, you know, Facebook and things like that, and that, you know, I've seen the stories of them where they're still working, but they're aware that their house has, you know, been lost, you know. So it's just, it's you know, I'm not sure where, the part of the show tonight was about, you know, not just so much even the initial response, but also, you know, going forward, you know, like you're going to start having people that are going to be calling 911, let's say, you know, it's just like with 9/11, Josh, you know, initially after 9/11, I felt there was a little bit of a drop off on people calling 911 for nonsense, you know. I seem to find that there wasn't as many, you know, people doing that, you know. Whereas now with this, as the initial, you know, effect starts to wear off, then people are going to start getting back to their normal life without thinking about the bigger end.
You know what? I had a friend of mine. We had a big talk about this because I don't necessarily know if people change their behavior and suddenly become all of a sudden
conscious,
community aware and conscious. I don't think that happens at all. I think what happens is everybody, especially in 9/11, because except for the people who were down south of the canal, it wasn't a great disruption to...
Yeah, like, but you did have the mayor and stuff. And you did have officials asking people not to call 911 unless it was a true emergency.
That's true, but what was happening? Everybody was glued to their TV.
Well, that could be why it doesn't happen as well.
They're all glued to their TV, and now when you have it, and now, so you had two things, you know. One is the affected areas, they lost their phones. They lost their power, they lost their phones.
Yeah. Josh, you know what? I think EpiJunkie's friend Rob is trying to call in.
All right, cool.
Let me see if we can get him online, get his quick take on it. Rob, are you there?
I am.
Hey, Rob, how you doing? Thanks for calling in.
I'm well.
So
Rob,
We're talking a little bit about this event. I know EpiJunkie said you were PIO where you are.
I am, yeah. I'm one of the PIOs in Sussex County, Delaware, and I'm a paramedic at Sussex County EMS.
Okay. All right. So what was your take on some of what went on initially? I mean, do you feel like you guys that it was prepared? Do you feel that the response was, you know, you had enough to respond adequately, or what do you think was it that was, I guess, lacking, or, you know, what you feel could have maybe been a little bit, done a little bit better, maybe?
All right. Well, let me give you kind of a little bit of heads up as to kind of how we positioned ourselves in preparation for the storm. We have a very intricate and robust storm plan, and our administrative staff was very involved in getting the line medics tuned up for this event. So we had a series of conference calls in the days leading up to. We had backfilled ships. We had crews on standby. We were ready to go with a very detailed plan for every aspect of this storm that would be placed into effect as conditions warranted, whether it was the pre-storm, the watch, the actual storm, and then the aftermath, how we would change our response model. One of the things that we did that I think was different, that I know a lot of other agencies kind of put these things together on the fly, but we actually had a task force model developed and ready to be implemented days before the storm. So we worked with the National Guard, the Delaware State Police, the local fire companies, DLDOT, our Department of Transportation, and the paramedics, ready to put paramedics, state troopers, and National Guardsmen into Humvees, working together as a team. So we were all ready to go, way before the storm started. So in terms of
response, now, have you ever practiced those deployments? Have you ever practiced those models?
It was one of those things that we had never practiced. We had talked about it. We've done some tabletop exercises, not anything we had ever practiced. And I will be honest that it didn't work flawlessly. We did have some issues with communications. It took a little bit of time to get everybody on the same page as to how we were going to respond. We needed to change our response model after talking to the medical directors. We have a state law here that says we have two medics that respond to every paramedic call. We were able to suspend that for the period of time we were in the task force model, where we had one medic responding to, if you're familiar with the Clawson codes, we just responded to Charlie and Delta calls as a single medic. It was one of those things that we didn't practice. We learned a lot from it, but in reality, it worked out very well.
So did you have a lot of damage where you were, or no?
We did have a lot of damage.
I'm trying to picture where you are. I can't picture exactly. So
okay, Sussex County is southern Delaware. We're right on the eastern shore of Maryland. We're just north of Ocean City. So if you saw some of the destruction on TV, where Ocean City, Maryland, got walloped, our beaches and coastline took a big portion of that as well.
Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah, so it was one of those things that we had practiced for in terms of planning, not actually in process, but worked out well. In terms of the damage that we took here, our main highway, Coastal Route 1, was closed basically from Rehoboth Beach, if you're familiar with the Rehoboth Beach area, closed from Rehoboth Beach all the way to Ocean City due to flooding, and that's the main path of transport and transit for our crews that are working in the south to get to BB Medical Center, which is our trauma hospital here. So that was difficult, trying to find ways to get around a lot of that. The beaches took a big hit. The beach communities got walloped. We had a lot of water, a lot of standing water, certainly nowhere nearly as bad as some of the communities in New Jersey and New York and, up the coast of Connecticut, Rhode Island got damaged. But we did take a good hit from this storm.
Yeah, it looked like it was coming as it was tracking. It was looking, as Bob was saying, like it was going to hit you guys directly. And then it just veered and came up to visit good old New Jersey, New York.
Yeah,
well, Sussex
got hit
a lot more. I'm about 2 hours north of where Rob is, so They got it a lot worse than my area. My area just had the areas that flood in a normal rainstorm flooded, but that was about it for northern Delaware.
Right, we were ready for it to come in and hit us square on, and I think that it would have been devastating. I mean, there were issues, and luckily we didn't have to affect any rescues, that were directly related to the storm. We had a couple of building collapses, some storm related damage, but no real storm related injuries. We were just trying to maintain business as usual, running our normal EMS calls.
Right.
With sustained winds of 40 or 50 miles an hour.
Right.
So let me ask the million-dollar question here. How come you guys had it so together? Who was the visionary, or what was the incident that sort of caused you guys to gel and say, you know what, we got to get this plan in action. We have to have something there in case we need to pull it out of the drawer and actually use it.
Part of the deal is we've had some severe weather events here that have really taxed the system. And I'm sure you know how Delaware works in terms of ALS response versus BLS response. We have two paramedics in a squad truck that go out and chase BLS ambulances. And when there's severe storms, you know, whether it's snow or flooding, it really impedes the response. And we have to kind of look at alternate ways to be able to get the units, the paramedics out there along with the BLS guys. So a couple of years ago, we had some pretty severe winter weather here, and we did some alternate deployment where we put the paramedics in the firehouses and had them running out on, you know, brush trucks and engines. And that was kind of really the beginning of we need to have a robust plan that we can adapt on the fly as conditions warrant. So Irene last year was a good test of that. I mean, we didn't get nearly the storm effect that we got even with Sandy, but Irene was a great way to test that a lot of these plans would work, whether we were going to deploy medics out to shelters, we were going to send medics to run individual calls with fire companies on their apparatus, when we were going to stop putting our trucks on the road and go to a no-response mode when the weather conditions would allow. And really, all of the brains behind that operation come to our admin staff. I mean, our operations director, Robbie Murray, put a lot of time into this stuff to develop plans and SOPs that were easily, you know, distributed to the guys. This is the way it's going to go. This is the way we're going to respond. Our dispatchers were able to quickly move from sending medic units to dispatching the task force units. And that kind of thing really, really worked out well. We had a really detailed plan, and I think that's the key to success in these things, that you have to be ready to go and plan for it when you don't need it. You know, it's like putting up your Christmas lights in August.
Yeah.
Just not plugging them in.
Just not plugging them in, but have them ready to go and ready to plug in, you know, as soon as you hear that first Christmas song on the radio. And that's really what we did. We had the plan ready. We had the Christmas lights hung, and we just didn't plug them in until the storm, you know, really demanded that we start, you know, switching up our response model.
So Rob, what is like the role you guys are playing now, like afterwards? Is there a specific role you're playing, or just trying to just, like you said, just trying to make sure you can still do business as usual as an EMS agency? Or is there a bigger role you're playing in the communities that you're serving?
Well, you know, for us, it was back to business as usual in terms of our EMS response on Wednesday. We went back to our regular, you know, two medics in a truck response, and that stuff just played out as usual. We just transitioned right back into our regular response mode. But the rest of what we're doing is we're really involved with helping to pre-plan with the fire companies to make sure that everybody's involved and on the same page, that we're doing a lot of after-action briefings and meetings with DelDOT and state police and the folks at the National Guard and the folks at the Red Cross who are staffing the shelters. We had medics at the shelters. We, you know, getting together with all these people that were in the EOC as the storm was going on, getting together with them before and after really helps to make a cohesive team. This was my first storm incident working as a PIO, so I actually got to see how all this stuff played out kind of on the inside, and it really made a lot of sense to me that, you know, having these plans and systemized responses ready to go is really the only way you can do it. I mean, agencies that try to respond on the fly, there's just too much, you know, the situation's too fluid to be able to just kind of make it up as you go. And I would say that any agency that doesn't have a really good strategic plan for how they're going to respond to severe incidents, you know, right from soup to nuts, you know, from what you're going to have at the stations in terms of, you know, 36 or 48 hours of supplies for the crew that's there, all the way down to how you're going to fuel your vehicles and when you're going to go into a non-response mode. And all of these little details that you don't think you need to have them planned out. And yeah. Most of the agencies that were there really had these details hammered out, and we were just able to kind of, slide our plans together, and everybody worked really well, really, really well together.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, you had some things you had to change around a little bit, but I think when you've got, like you said, a very detailed plan in place to begin with, I think it makes it easier to sort of adjust if you have to, if there's some things that aren't actually going to work the way you maybe expect them to.
Well, an IAP is, a living document. It's not something that's meant to be written once and never revisited, never refined.
Right.
I mean, there's always, each incident, you always find something that you can do better or something that didn't work as well as you thought. I would be interested, and I'm sure some of the listeners would be, is this is your first year as an information officer. How did you fall into that? What was your path to information officer?
I think that's a good point, Josh. Because I think some people, I mean, I'm a big fan of agencies having PIOs, and a lot of them don't. So,
and they're usually not medics.
Yeah, so I think it's a good, Rob, if you could just give an overview, like what was your role during this and all, as a PIO,
sure.
What you expected. This way, maybe when listening would be a good idea, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I wasn't a PIO simply for the paramedics. I was a PIO for Sussex County Emergency Operations, and we have a team.
I mean,
of,
did you have to have your teeth whitened? I mean, really? Let's get into the
nitty-gritty. I didn't. Luckily, I didn't have to have my teeth whitened, and I wore my regular flight suit into the EOC, so that was okay. But what happened was, in a nutshell, the PIO team is comprised mostly of paramedics and our public information officer for the county, Chip Guy. And Chip Guy kind of runs the normal information push for the county. When there's press releases and things from the EOC, he's the guy. But this event was so large that he actually needed help. So we have a couple of people that are trained and have gone to, Fire Academy and taken advanced PIO, that sort of thing, that has some experience. I kind of got drafted into this because my background prior to becoming a medic was I worked in broadcasting for the last 20 years. So I have a little bit of experience in speaking to the media. I know how to couch things for the media. I know what can be said and what can't be said, and how to get that information out there clearly in soundbite form, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
So when they were looking for an additional member of the PIO team, Joe Hopple, who was our education coordinator here at Sussex County, called me and said, "Hey, would you be interested in helping out?" And obviously yes, I would do whatever we needed. I mean, there was a big part of me that wanted to be out in Humvee, running out in the storm, but working in the PIO office was definitely something that was right up my alley. And what we did there was not only talk to the media, and we talked to all of the media as the storm was tracking right at us. Everybody on the planet was calling and wanted to know about road closures and rescues and all of the same information that we were, that we were spooling out to everybody. But we were also very, very plugged into social media. We have numerous Twitter accounts. We have Facebook accounts. Our chief information officer, Chip Guy, was producing video updates on YouTube that were almost hourly updates as to road closures and situational updates for the residents of the county. So we were not only talking to media, but we were getting information out there to residents of the county about road closures and shelters and, information from the governor's office and information from the National Guard. So it was really one of those things that I think was a good opportunity for us to use social media to our advantage and really get that information out there. And the people that we spoke to really appreciated the fact that we were constantly updating our Twitter and Facebook accounts.
That sounds sounds interesting. It sounds busy at the same time. But I mean, how long have you been a medic for, if I can ask?
I've been a medic for 2.5 years.
So, you know, that now that you're in it to not to the degree that you're actually going to get burnt out on it and
right.
such, you know, you talked about that conflict of wanting to be on the bus, you know, wanting to
right.
be out in the Humvees, out servicing the people. I mean, how did you deal with that conflict when you had to be sort of inside in you know, the sweatshirt environment with the cameras and the microphones and the phone calls? And knowing where you needed resources, not being able to go there and do anything.
Well, the big thing to remember is we were never short resources. It was never a matter of we needed operational medics in the field. And if that were the case, then obviously I would have been redeployed out to the field. But it's the same as anything. You know, when you see something good that, you know, your department's there, you're like, I wish I was there with the rest of the guys out working.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were doing important stuff in the EOC at the PIO office, and I never felt that, you know, that my job there was minimized, you know, that we were doing anything less than the guys that were out getting their feet wet, you know, sloshing through the sand and the water. The information that we were putting out was very important to residents that may not have had television. Their cable lines had blown down, and all they had was, you know, their Twitter on their phone or the Facebook on their phone, and we were sending out information as to, you know, the status of shelters and road closures and if they were going to be able to get out of Fenwick Island or Dewey Beach. And that that was important information.
And I didn't want to phrase that question in the sense of, well, why the hell weren't you out there? Because as
right.
a matter of fact, Jim and I frequently talk about the other avenues within EMS and how to use your skill sets in a way that's both beneficial to yourself and your career, and you know, and you know, keeping your feet, you know, keeping your feet in the game. And it's a really, really tough landscape for a lot of people. I mean, they sort of see it as growing old on the bus and not a lot of other choices. And I think that especially with the idea that more and more communities are becoming aware that, you know, failure to plan is planning to fail, and that they've got to come up, they have a responsibility, much less a fiduciary responsibility to their communities, to make these plans, to enact these plans, to practice these plans, and that, you know, within that avenue, there's a whole range of jobs that can be filled by EMS, and it's sort of nice to see that, you know, a community does pick from their paramedics and say, hey, you know, we need your skill sets here, too, to explain what's going on to the public.
Right, and to be, you know, I'll sum it up this way. I moved to Southern Delaware from Seattle, Washington, to come work for Sussex County EMS. I mean, I knew what their operational aspect was. I knew how the department ran. I knew that there was going to be opportunity to grow here, not just as a paramedic. I mean, I am still a field paramedic. I'm on shift tonight. I'm standing out in the apparatus bay, which is why it sounds so echoey. But there are opportunities to grow here, whether it's in education or whether it's in special operations or, you know, in as a PIO or wherever your strengths may lie. And that was one of the things that I felt was really strong about Sussex, and one of the reasons that I really wanted to come here and become part of the team was to be able to take on roles like a PIO or like a special operations person when we've got events like that. So, and I'm sure that more departments will be forming divisions like this, especially third services, if they don't have them already, they're going to need to branch out simply as the role of EMS changes and we become more involved in community paramedicine and you know, pre-planning for these big events and becoming more than just ambulance drivers.
Well, I hope that you dip your toes, Rob, into training as well and teaching, because it's very important that when you have these skills and you have the first-line experiences that you pass them on. You know, it's like my first OB doc taught me, see one, do one, teach one. You know,
right.
It's a way of making the fire a little bit more gentle when you're thrown into it.
Exactly. Guys, thanks so much for having me on, and I know you probably want to.
Oh, thanks for calling in.
Thanks very much. Appreciate your time.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. Have a great one, Rob. I think Rob makes a good point, too, and this is something, you know, the EMS and events like this, like you said, Josh, it's not just about being out in the field. There are some other vital roles that you have to play, you know, as a first responder, you know. And I think everybody wants to be out there in the thick of it, and they want to, you know, be out there doing all these things. But, you know, sometimes it's about the coordination end of it. You know, it's about the, you know, getting resources and coordinating those resources, or giving that information out to the appropriate, you know, media outlets, or whether it's even social media stuff, you know. So I think that people need to remember that too, that what they see or what they, you know, maybe experience as far as seeing the ambulances out there and the fire trucks out there and all, that there's a whole nother level of responders that are doing equally important things behind the scenes.
Right. Right. And, you know, especially nowadays, where there's always this big influx and change of staffing, and people shift from one to the other, and there's such a high burnout in EMS that everybody has to sort of multitask and get multi areas of discipline under their belt, so they can shift from, you know, field work to teaching to planning to, you know, to public awareness. All of that's critical.
And I think, because I think too, the more well-rounded you are, the bigger an asset you're going to be when it comes to a big event like this. You know, you're going to be a much more bigger asset to the overall, you know, response, you know, the more that you're well-versed in all these different areas. Before, we only got about 10 minutes left, guys. So I want to give the number out. Anybody listening, you want to call in real quick, give a quick little commentary on what you experienced or what you're experiencing right now as an EMS provider for this. Give us a call. It's 877-217-3924. We'd love to hear what you have to say. Mm-hmm. I thought we'd get some more calls than actually today, Josh, but I know, you know, I think a lot of the responders out there, even that
I
did
think
respond,
some people
are still
just
out
burnt.
There, or just, yeah, I was going to say just no time to really, you know, take part in it. But I just figured, you know, give people an opportunity maybe to get some stuff off their chest and, you know, give them an opportunity to kind of vent a little bit about what that was going on when they were out there in the field. Bob, any other thoughts? I mean, I know you're hanging on there with us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, just what Ron said, and you guys, we're kind of wired to react to things. You know, we go to school and we go on 911 calls, and we're just sort of we're used to flying by the seat of our pants and just kind of dealing with putting out little fires as they come up. And I think that Sussex does a great job at pre-planning things and making relationships with the National Guard and law enforcement and the fire companies before the big one happens.
Right.
And sort of paving the road for when the disaster comes, that they can all work together and they're all familiar faces.
Yeah. I mean, listen, where I am, I'm in a very small area where the agency that I work for, and they had meetings, a couple of meetings before the storm hit, and discussing, you know, who was going to be doing what. And it's largely, it's an all volunteer fire, you know, fire department, and we're the only ambulance agency in the area. So just sort of getting an idea of who was going to be doing what and how they were going to respond and all that. And, you know, luckily it didn't hit us that bad. So, you know, there wasn't like a overwhelming of the resources. But again, there was some pre-planning that was going into it. And I think that is a big part of it. It is a part of making it, I hate to use the word a success, but, you know, just a way to make the response, I guess, as successful as possible, you know. So.
Yeah, no, look, I've said it before, you know, it becomes a world that, you know, you got to make friends in, you got to get familiar with, to the point that you know who's going to be the players, so there aren't surprises when these incidences come down. You can't say, you know, oh, wait a second, we don't have a liaison to the electric company. I mean, that's like a critical failure.
Yeah, it's not trying to figure that out when the power goes out.
Right.
Yeah, trying to, who we call, you know, when there's no power.
Power goes out. Anybody have a flashlight?
You know? And the thing is, though, too, is that even it's good to have these things in place and to, and, you know, Rob said over here they did some tabletop, you know, sort of planning on it and exercises. And while, you know, that's not a replacement for the real thing, it can give you some familiarization on what needs to get done, you know, when it happens. And I think that even that, you know, is good to do when you're doing these planning, because if you have an event that is unexpected, you know, you can still respond. You don't need to have days worth of warning because you've got something that's in place. And you, like you said, Josh, you know the different players that have to be contacted and that you need to get in touch with to respond to something appropriately, you know, so.
Definitely, too.
All right, so listen, only 5 minutes left, guys, so why don't we just end it there? Bob, any closing thoughts before we head out?
Just one. I wrote a post about EMS Family Resources. It's a group that, it's sort of the police benevolent associations for EMS. And it started with a group in North Jersey. And I know that a lot of their members, you know, most of the members do EMS in northern and central New Jersey. And they're been hit the hardest by Sandy. So they have a link on their website to donate to the relief effort.
Okay. I'll grab that link from you, Bob.
Okay, I'll send you an email.
You can email it to me. I saw your post. I didn't have a chance. I did see the link to it, though, on Facebook. I didn't have a chance to go look at it. But I'll get that. I'll put that in the show notes so people can take a look at that as well. Josh, any closing thoughts before we head on out?
No, I thought it was pretty interesting. I thought we covered a lot of territory here.
Yeah, it's hard to cover everything, I think. You know?
No, we can't ever, and we're not there to solve it or do all that. I mean, we sort of take a conversation for what's going on. I mean, it's the whole root of the show is to take that conversation we'd have on the back of an ER bay if we had a few extra minutes and expand it out so, you know, people can participate and tell us what their experiences are from around the country. I'd love to get a couple more, maybe even next week or the week after as things settle down,
yeah,
some of our first responders who were out, you know, in Long Beach and upstate New York in the areas that were really
crushed. Yeah, all right, guys, so why don't we end it there? I want to thank EpiJunkie and John Boyles in the chat room for chatting away and keeping it live. Epi, thanks for having Rob call us up. Appreciate that, guys. Bob, I guess maybe we'll hopefully see you next week.
Yes, if the EMS guys are nice. They actually just gave us we just got a call now. So.
All right, cool.
Nice to wait to the
All right.
Have a good week. Be safe.
All right, too, be Bob. Safe. Take care, Bob.
All righty. Guys, be sure to follow us on Twitter. We're at EMSSafe on Twitter. And you can check out either my Facebook page is facebook.com/TheEMSProfessional or Josh Facebook page. Josh is at facebook.com/WantNU, WANTYNU.
We ain't nothing till you need us.
You're going to confuse them. They're not going to know what the hell that is.
We ain't nothing till you need us.
The subway thing and the bus thing, you're going to confuse
everybody
all over again.
You know what? If you can't follow, then get out of the way.
Oh.
It's like the guys driving 55 in the left-hand lane. Stop it already. Just stop it.
I'm doing the speed limit.
If you can go out to any of those people,
I'm doing the speed limit.
Stop it.
I'm doing the speed limit there. You can't get
mad at me. Exactly. Well, you know, I hope you like the shoulder of the road.
Safety first. All right, Josh, that's it. I guess we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Take care, John. Jim, be safe.
I'm Jim. John.
Yeah, no, I was thinking John online.
I know.
Jim, be safe. I'll talk to you, man.
All righty. All right, everybody, that's it for the show. Again, any comments, concerns, be sure to post them in the comments below, either here on Blog Talk Radio or over on the blog at emsofficehours.com. And send me any suggestions for topics at jhoffman@ems-safety.com. Love to talk about what you are thinking is concerning EMS and what your thoughts are. And go ahead and get a show out there on that topic. So until next week, guys, as always, Jim Hoffman, stay safe.